Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Excellent.
You were the only one I didn't actually say hello to as I walked in this morning. How are you?
Why, are you mad at me?
No, quite the opposite. I just wanted to make sure you didn't think I was mad at you.
Oh, no.
No, Alan and I were talking. Rich and I were talking. I wanted to make sure that you were okay.
Yeah, we're cool.
Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable panel. It is Thursday. It is the 22nd of September. It's a very busy news day. We have a lot going on.
Whoa.
All hell is breaking loose, so we're going to try to try to get our hands up on this as much as we can, and we'll do that in just a moment.
Let me introduce around this.
Yes. Good point. Let's introduce the panel. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm keeping my eye out on all those people who can issue challenges for the fund drive that's coming.
That's right. And don't forget the Capitol Steps, please.
Oh, yeah. What about that?
$125. Go see the Capitol Steps and their first post-election concert. And it is, I don't have the paper in front of me, so I'm doing this off memory. So if I'm wrong, I apologize. But I believe it is November 18th. Is that correct? I think so.
Well, Colleen will come running.
You know, we have all those papers here the other day. And I don't
Colleen will come running in if that's
anyway,
right.
Anyway, so.
And that's when we all get together. This is an annual thing now.
It's a big party.
The entire WMC crowd, don't you know, gets together to do that.
Now, from what I understood, we were about a fifth of the way through our ticket allotment as of the end of the day yesterday. So
first, day one.
Day one. So we want to move the tickets. All the money goes into the lockbox. And as Alan said, that and challenges and all things are going good because we want to get you back to regular programming so we can cover this election and other stuff. So here we go. So do that. It's WAMC.org. And I'll get you the right date. It's all on the line, by the way, WAMC.org. It's right there. So, Alan, good morning.
Good morning.
We already said good morning.
As Ray
said good morning.
As Ray Graff says, good morning.
But I didn't introduce you properly as the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany.
Thank you.
I have to give your creds. Corporate attorney Rich Honan is with us to keep us all honest. Good morning, sir.
Very nice.
He must have a big case today because he is sartorially resplendent.
I happen to be dressed in a suit for...
He looks like
a lawyer. Will you be in court?
I will not be in court.
Okay, well,
but
good.
He will be hustling a client.
Not hustling.
Oh, no, meeting with a client.
I don't hustle.
Federal,
yes, you do, and we're about to see it.
Federal corruption charges were announced this morning against two former close aides to Governor Andrew Cuomo, a senior state official, and six other people in a devastating blow to the governor's innermost circle and a repudiation of how his prized upstate economic development programs were managed. The charges against the former aides Joseph Percoco and Todd Howe and the state official Elaine Calieros were the culmination of a long-running federal investigation into the Cuomo administration's attempts to lure jobs and businesses to upstate New York's limping economy by furnishing billions of dollars in state funds to developers from Buffalo to Albany. Mr. Howe is cooperating with the investigation, according to a 79-page criminal complaint unsealed on Thursday.
And we have, Joe, just let me just interrupt that we have a T-shirt you could have for $100 with two canaries on it. Don't you see?
The coal mine and the...
No, two canaries. Todd Howe is singing like a canary.
Oh, I see. Singing like a canary. I got it. I got you. I was going with the canary in the coal mine. I apologize. Okay, so... What we know is that at noon, Preet Bharara will announce and formally announce these charges. What we also know about Preet Bharara, as he has in former cases, as we saw with Dean Skelos, as we saw with Shelley Silver, that he will go into great detail and go into a very long and involved, and I don't mean that negatively, but a very detailed look at the charges and what happened and what they are alleging in their counts.
This is the same Preet Bharara who both Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer says it's too early to tell whether they should be reappointed, the best U.S. attorney in the history of this country. And we have Hillary Clinton, because we also know he's looking into the Clinton Foundation. Hillary Clinton saying it's too early to tell whether he should be reappointed if she wins. Ooh, bad.
Well, I don't know on what basis you say he's the best, and he should be looking into the Clinton Foundation. And if she does reappoint somebody else, I think the investigation will continue anyway.
He is the best, by the way.
And of the Trump Foundation as well.
You can't hand me that. Yeah. That gets me.
All right. So let's get to these charges. Yeah. Federal corruption charges announced. So this is Joseph Percoco, Todd Howe and Elaine Calieros. And Rosemary, let's go to you first, especially with the word about Elaine Calieros.
Yeah, he's an intriguing figure, very both open to coverage and yet closed. He has completely managed his image, and it's very hard to tell what to think about him. He's brought lots of development to the state. He has gotten great power from that, from state officials, because of his job generating capability,
including Rosemary, the highest pay of any New York state official.
Yeah, and he may deserve it. If jobs are indeed our and economic development is our big goal, then he may well deserve it. But his methods have been suspect. He is terribly into secrets. He's not transparent at all. So we don't really know. I'm hoping that this charge, I don't know where it's going to lead, but I hope that if nothing else, it will open up a whole lot of information on how he operates and what he's done.
So let me ask this question, Alan. It seems to be the elephant in the room, if I may.
You may.
How does this not lead in some way, shape, or form to Andrew Cuomo himself?
This has not been a good week for Andrew Cuomo. First of all, the circle grows tighter. So you're talking about Joe Prococo, who has been described as Andrew by Andrew, I believe, as his best friend in the past. Also said
a brother.
A brother, the third brother in the Cuomo family, one which who was liked more by Mario than the other two. It was funny, but not so funny.
He said that during his father's funeral, and then since these charges were announced, has distanced himself and said he didn't know them that well.
Yes, that's true. So you got Todd Howe, who is the canary in the coal mine.
Right.
You got Prococo. You got Cuomo having to show up at or being put on the witness list for the Chris Christie trial.
Yes.
So he may be asked some questions there that either are important or not. There are many people who know Andrew Cuomo who will tell you this. He is not a guy who is interested in personally enriching himself. But he's a tough guy, and he wants to win. And he does punish his enemies. That we have seen. This is going to be interesting to watch as we're going to have to see what Todd Howe has to say about the governor. It's one thing to ask for money. He won't be doing that, Cuomo. But it is another to say, we need a lot of campaign money to run this, to run these campaigns, and let's see who puts what in.
Does it not, much like Bridgegate, we've been talking earlier this week about Bridgegate, and the whole thing is if you have dealt, as the New York Times puts it in their article, if you've dealt such a blow to the governor's innermost circle, how then does that not leak onto the governor?
Well, it cost, I'm sorry for interrupting, but it cost clearly the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, a shot at the vice presidency because they knew it was coming up, and therefore so it had tremendous effect on him.
So do you believe, as he has said in the past, and it may be cliched at this point, but do you think at 12:30, 1 o'clock, when Preet Bharara starts finishing up, says, stay tuned?
Well, we know when Preet Bharara says stay tuned, it means something else is going to happen. He's a man of his word, and it has happened. So it all depends on what was said to Cuomo in the confines of his inner office, what people knew, what they didn't know. I am sure that the governor is not going to be indicted.
Okay. You know, a federal indictment is not good news, okay? That's for sure. But it's just a charge. I mean, we are, like, way jumping ahead. I feel like we're gleeful about this.
Well, gleeful? I think that's a very strong word, Rosemary. Are you gleeful?
No, not at all.
And certainly not me.
Like I said, this
well,
is
well, I don't know
is
how
this
it's
gonna...
gleeful, but I mean, I think asking, isn't that asking the question about the innermost circle of how that then affects the governor? I mean, isn't that somewhat an apt comparison?
An apt comparison to what?
To Bridgegate and to Governor Christie.
Yeah, but I can see being gleeful about Bridgegate. That was a vengeful act. Anything that Calieros and the rest of the Cuomo inner circle did was to build up a depressed area of the state.
Oh, no, you
and
don't know
And he's had
that.
Some success.
Well, no, wait a second. Wait a second. We don't know if there's a quid pro quo involved in all of this. We don't know as if you put money into the campaign, you get favorable treatment. We do know that at least in a few of these cases, some of these contracts were awarded so that only one person, one bidder could win. And now, look, Andrew Cuomo is a tough guy. Everybody will say that. He's a guy you don't want to mess around with. And if you do, there can be a punishment. We see this again and again and again. Now, there will be people who are gleeful about this. Believe me, there will be.
Rich, are you gleeful?
I'm not gleeful. I think, though, that, and I have to be circumspect because I've had some involvement in this, but I think that I don't think there's any indication that this reaches directly to Cuomo. Yeah. I think if there was, we would have heard it. I think somebody would have said it.
That would have been the headline today.
Yeah, and I think they're going to say the headline, I think, was, you know, the highest paid, you know, public employee in the state, and that's a pretty big catch if that's where this thing goes.
Well, what about the two guys who were his closest pals?
I think if you're going to make an analogy to Bridgegate, and again, I'm not speaking specifically. I think the idea of Bridgegate was even the taint was. Even if you're not involved, you created an environment that allowed this to happen. And I think that's the closest glancing blow they might be able to get to Cuomo, that, you know, you were friends with these guys who allowed this to happen. But I haven't seen any indication that this was done at someone's behest or to protect some kind of contract. Well, I just haven't seen it.
If they had that, if they had anything like that, we would certainly have heard it. Can I ask you a question, Rich?
Sure.
I know that it's not really fair because you didn't come prepared to ask that. But when you tell our audience and tell us that you have to be somewhat circumspect because you have some involvement in this, do you have a client? Is that what you're saying?
When I say I have to be circumspect, it means that I've given advice to someone who might be involved in something we're talking about.
Okay.
There you go. What are we looking for when Pre-Barrera speaks this afternoon?
Details.
Well, details.
And,
dirt. And whether dirt. they've got them or not. I suspect if Howe is, quote, cooperating, it's going to be substantial. And I think you're going to find that. I also think it's going to be interesting to see how close it gets to Cuomo, as we've just said.
I'll be looking for a reaction from Cuomo, too.
Really?
Yeah, pre-talks, and then I want to hear what Cuomo has to say about it.
Well, okay. And can you guess what that's going to be?
We're looking into it fully. We're cooperating. We're sure we'll be vindicated.
Well, what's interesting?
Well, I think he's going to. I agree. I don't think he's going to say the last. He's going to say, let the process go. There's nothing for me to be vindicated about because I'm not involved. You know,
he is involved. It's his administration.
There's no question that I have that I'm personal friends with some of these people, and if mistakes were made by them, I'm disappointed.
Right.
And he has
right.
his own. But right. he
yeah,
has,
I can see that.
Joe's about to tell you something that's
you've
very
written these
important.
Before.
But he has his own investigation going.
Well, quote, his own investigation going. So he hired this guy Schwartz, right? Bart
yes.
Schwartz is the guy's name, I think so. And he's supposed to look into all of this. What? What? You mean when the FBI and the U.S. attorney are turning over every rock and doing all of this stuff, you hire somebody at the taxpayer's expense, by the way, who will do a parallel investigation and who, by the way, has been assigned, as I remember the story, has been assigned to running some of the agencies that were giving out some of the money. The very guy who's doing the investigating is now being given this other portfolio. Now, I may have this slightly wrong, but I think I'm right about that.
I would also say what Rosemary said, by the way, which is, you know, it's just a charge, right? It's, you know, nothing's necessarily been proven yet. Although I will say these days, especially in federal prosecutions of public officials, it's so clear now that you really need the direct quid pro quo that it's hard to believe that in this day and age, even in the last few months, that a federal prosecutor would go forward without some direct direct payment, direct consideration, something. I haven't read the whole indictment. Yeah.
You look at the governor in Virginia. Yeah, got overturned. Yeah.
It's really hard.
And by the way, it's disgusting that it was overturned, but that's another story.
Barrera's office started in early April, so it's been 6.5 months of investigation to lead us to today. And I'm sure the investigation was well underway
A lot of people were wrong, Joe. You know, there were people who were assuming that somehow Barrera wasn't going to do this till after the election was over, and that he's being leaned on. You don't lean on Pete Barrera, which is one of the reasons I suspect that we're hearing that maybe he shouldn't be
re-upped in his position.
I don't know, Alan. You have this like godlike adoration of him that maybe that's what I'm reacting to. But maybe he's just like a regular politician, like all the others, and he's doing this for as a grandstand and because he wants to be governor and or president someday.
Well, there's been no indication of that. He's denied
you
it.
You asked him, and he said, "I'm not talking about it at this time. I'm only doing this job." That's not a denial. That no, I never want to run.
Well, I got
to
tell you,
I will say this: if I asked you, so explain to me, and I know this is a larger issue. Explain to me how, say, for example, the people of the state of New York have been directly hurt by this.
Well, it depends.
Right? I mean, where do you come out on
that? Yeah, that's the difference between Bridgegate and this. That was obnoxious.
Yeah, it was. Somebody should go to jail for Bridgegate.
Yeah.
No. If contracts, for example, were being awarded.
No, let me answer.
You asked the question. Yeah. Let me answer. If contracts are being awarded based on favoritism or whether or not people put money into political campaigns or other favors or hiring some people who were Cuomo's campaign manager, for example, to do that and going back and forth between being on the state payroll and not, I think there are substantial questions. And when that happens and there's a breakdown in public integrity, then the people of New York are being hurt because then from boss tweet on, pay to play.
From a macro standpoint, I agree with that. From a micro standpoint, I'm
Were they hurt by Dean Skelos? Were they hurt by Shelley Silver?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Well, if you couldn't get a contract because you weren't in the right space.
Oh, specific people certainly were hurt. That's true.
Yeah. All right. What?
Nothing. I was looking at a story in The Guardian about a Trump...
Well, come on.
I know you had your Trump face on.
The whole time
we've been talking, Rosemary's had her Trump face on.
All right.
So
we haven't hit that subject yet. So just wait. All right,
let's hit it.
We have to take a break. And
Rosemary's getting me angry today.
Let Rosemary keep her Trump face on. We'll be back to that story in just a moment. We welcome your letters on this and all other subjects. Roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, with Trump face, and Rich Honan. We will continue our conversation after we hear news from the BBC.
Wow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Sorry, we were just doing calisthenics with Rich during the break. It was
dancing.
Nice.
It was not calisthenics. That was
okay,
dancing.
Dancing, yeah.
Yeah, that's dancing.
And you're all jealous.
Yeah. I am.
All right.
I want ice cream.
No, you'll get it on your Trump face. Let's do some letters and then we'll talk about other issues.
Scott says, Preet, thank you, Rosemary, for calling out Alan's man crush on Bahar. Very tiresome. What's a man crush? Is that homosexual?
No. It's like a bromance. Yeah.
Oh, I see. And Robert says, Alan's right. The Supreme Court's decision to overturn McDonald's conviction was disgusting and most likely made because the court members themselves frequently take free trips and other goodies from entities with cases they're in front of or may come to the court. They therefore needed to insulate themselves, making such actions a crime only when reciprocity can be proved. Very disappointing. I couldn't agree with... Robert agrees with me, and I agree with him. It was disgusting. I just want to comment that I listened to the roundtable panel yesterday, Wednesday, and that I found Rosemary and Libby both to be at the top of the game, providing insightful and enlightening comments. I'd like to particularly point out Rosemary's concise and clear explanation of the difference between black-on-black violence and the goals of the Black Lives Matter movement. Thank you from Richard.
You're welcome.
Michael says, why would Cuomo, a Democratic governor, be involved with a vindictive act against a Democratic mayor? Well, we all do know that Cuomo does not like to play well with his buddies in the sandbox. And that's the most I'm going to say. But I must say, of all the things I've seen Cuomo do that I consider not to be right, this incredible war against the mayor of New York, I've never been able to understand it. I'll be honest with you. Okay, I don't know what this is all about.
This is radio magic right now.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right.
You're in good form today.
I don't have anything other than.
Let me dance some more. We could fill it in. It would fill
I
in
have
the
nothing.
Time here.
Go ahead.
Okay. Here we go.
I have nothing.
All right. So Donald Trump embraces wider use of stop and frisk by police. Donald Trump on Wednesday called for the broad use of the contentious stop-and-frisk policing strategy in America's cities, embracing an aggressive tactic whose legality has been challenged and whose enforcement has been abandoned in New York.
By the way, what you just read was a news story, not an editorial. That was the actual news story from the New York Times. What was that, the Times or was that the Post?
That was the Times.
Right. But it was not factual, Rich.
Call for the broad use of the contentious. It's not contentious.
Contentious.
Oh, it's contentious. Come on.
And what was the keep going?
The stop and frisk policing strategy in America's cities, embracing an aggressive tactic. It is not an aggressive tactic.
I don't know that it's aggressive.
Well, the Supreme Court has kind of ruled on it.
Yeah, and if you stop every federal judge.
Federal judge.
If you stop everybody who is walking in the street because they're black, and we can all project ourselves into that situation,
I don't think that's aggressive. What stop and frisk is supposed to be.
It may not be what it's supposed to be, but there's an awful lot of evidence that that's what it's turned out to be.
What's it supposed to be?
Well, it's supposed to allow the police to go and use their experience and their powers of observation to try and nip criminal activity in the bud. Now, I will say, I will agree with you that even in places like New York City, it admittedly was taken too far and should have been ratcheted back. I think even the police would admit.
How was it taken too far?
Just that it was basically being used more to hassle people than to actually
African Americans.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I mean, no question, and that's wrong, and that should stop. But the idea that that you're going to divest a police officer of A, their powers of observation, B, the benefit of their experience, and not allow them to kind of go up to a bunch of people and say, "Hey, what's going on?
So what are you guys still doing here?"
Hey, Rich. Yeah. There's an evidentiary base for our discussion here, and that is that if you take a look at who's been stopped and you take a look at what the percentage of that population is in the total population, you will see that black people get picked on much more than white people. It's that simple.
Because the stop and frisk usually happens in high crime neighborhoods, which unfortunately are usually low income neighborhoods.
It doesn't even matter. In New York, we've found that you can outlaw a police tactic, for example, strangleholds, and you still have dead people who don't get indicted for using strangleholds, which are captured on video.
Look, there's no question that there are excesses. Everyone knows that. I conceded that there were excesses with stop and frisk. But what I find interesting is people say, well, stop and frisk is kind of a there's a racist basis to that. And I'll tell you, if I lived in a low-income community, I'd say, "Wow, why are you painting me with the brush that maybe I want to live in a safe neighborhood, and maybe I'm not so concerned about stop and frisk because I don't do anything wrong, and I want my neighborhood to be safe, and I want the police to patrol."
That's funny because that ain't the way it is. The way that it is the people who live in that neighborhood are very aware that their children, for example, are going to go out and get stopped and frisked and have to have a special relationship with police officers, which are to raise your hand and to be respectful and to do all of those things that other kids with different complexions don't have to do.
I disagree. That's the same thing I teach my kids to do. When a police officer and when I go speak at high schools and things like
campaign for Trump. The idea that black and white are treated the same by police in any community in this country is just empirically ridiculous.
So let's just pause there for a moment and take this politically one step further and talk about the timing of Trump's announcement as we have these police shootings of black people once again drawing scrutiny and great protests across the country.
So you have Don King, the somewhat disgraced boxing
promoter
who went to jail, right? I think he did. Standing up in front of Trump with Trump smiling on, using the N-word in all of its terrible form, and Trump nodding and saying, why were they up there? Why is Trump going to talk to pastors and others? Because he knows that in order to win, he's got to peel some of that black vote off, some of it, in order to win the election. That simple.
Is it unfair for Trump to appeal to the African American community?
All.
No, he just isn't doing a very good job of it.
I think he is.
I don't think his numbers are going to be higher.
I think that Hillary Clinton's numbers are certainly going to be lower than Barack Obama's numbers in 12, don't you think?
Well, maybe.
It's 95-5 right now.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, but who votes? See, that's where Rich is right. Who comes out to vote is really important in this. All I can say is I'm not allowed to use the word schizophrenic on the radio anymore because I got bawled out.
Yeah.
But
I think you can use schizophrenic.
I mean it in the casual.
No,
not
the schizophrenic
sense.
Either. No, I've been bawled out for everything.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
this is a free speech zone. You can say
whatever
maybe
you want. Yes and maybe no. So
this
I wanted to say that Trump does seem to have a divided
personality. This will be a no-spin zone.
Trump does appear to have a divided personality. Let's put it that way on this. He goes to the pastors and he says, you got to vote for me. On the other hand, he nods in approval, in seeming approval, as Don King is using the N-word to a group.
Is Don King a racist? Is that where we're going with
this? Of course
he
is.
So Don King's a racist, and Trump was endorsing racism. Is that where we're going with this?
Don King is just a silly man.
Yeah,
and
who he has chosen to use as a surrogate.
And Trump is making a very ham-handed appeal to African Americans. That's what I'm saying.
What-handed?
Ham-handed.
What?
Ineffective, amateurish, ridiculous.
I see what's going on here. I see what's going on in Chicago, Mr. Trump said before praising the technique, stop and frisk, again, as an incredible technique. Black leaders reacted swiftly and harshly. Mark Morial, president of the National Urban League, said the idea of creating a national stop and frisk policy is the equivalent of advancing martial law and is beyond the constitutional power of the presidency.
Yeah, I don't think he was advocating that. And I'll also say I would guess that the people who live in Ferguson and the people who live in Baltimore would probably like to see some increased police presence as their crime rates have gone up in light of the investigation.
A non-racist police protest?
Of course.
Okay.
Well, no, I think Rich has a point. We do know historically that the people on Park Avenue in New York had better police protection than the people in Harlem. We know that. On the other hand, we also know that people know racism when they see it. And there aren't these angry folks who are coming out in the middle of the night, North Carolina and other places, because they don't really see their very essence way of life being threatened.
83% of the stops in New York from 2004 to 2012 involved blacks and Hispanics, even though those two groups made up just under 50% of the city's residents.
But what, and I every time you give that, I ask the same question and there's no answer. What percentage did they bear to the percentage of the community that was being policed? And the answer is, it's not out of proportion with that community. Look,
I'm leaving the show and going to join the Black Lives Matter movement. This is Rich. Come on, we're getting a demonstration of how the press can report things about Donald Trump and his supporters and followers just overlook it. Why are we so happy to say at a time when in Columbus and Tulsa and Charlotte, virtually a swath across the nation, we're looking at police brutality, and the response to that is to try to bring back a method that has been proved overwhelmingly unfair to black citizens. And that's supposed to be admirable? I don't get it.
I don't think it has been proved to be overwhelmingly unfair. I think there's been times when it's
83% is overwhelmingly unfair?
What percentage of the population did they bear to that community, Alan? You could be in certain communities where a large percentage of that community, you know, may be non-white.
Let me spin around. I'm unaware. I don't know these numbers by heart, but I'm unaware of any community where stop and frisk was a problem because white people were being stopped. It's always minority communities where it becomes an issue.
Well, other than in high drug areas, I agree with you. Because in high drug areas, it was for that reason. They're saying you're a white person. Why are you doing?
Why are you there?
Yeah, but I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, I'll say what the police would say. Where do you want us to go patrol? Do you want us to go patrol in Allen's neighborhood so we could catch the skunk that he's been trying to catch for the last 2 years?
Or catch some of the speeders on Allenbeck Avenue.
Or do you want us to go where there's a density of population and where people live and where, unfortunately, crime happens? Where do you want them to go? And how do you want, and what do you want them to do when they're there? You say you want them to interact with the community, and that's and to an extent, that's what they're doing. Yes, it can be taken too far.
Stop and frisk is a way to interact with the community.
But you can't.
Oh, whoa!
You have to have. You can't stop and frisk.
Hi.
You have to have.
Put your hands up. Let's get to know each other.
Rosemary,
Jesus,
you know that's not true. You know you have to have. You have to have a basis for the stop and frisk. Right? You can't.
All right. So let's pause there. We'll take a break. Everybody calm down a little bit. We'll go to some letters, and then we'll have a little bit of a, you know, just take it down a couple notches. We'll be right back after this.
Support comes from Oblong Books, Hudson Valley YA Society, presenting Danielle Page and Sarah Porter Sunday, September 25th at 4 p.m. Oblongbooks.com. Saratoga Hospital, welcoming Dr. Elizabeth Valentine to Saratoga Hospital Medical Group's Hematology Oncology Practice on our Malta campus, Exit 12. SaratogaHospital.org for details. Berkshire Stringed Instruments School of Lutery at Solvay Guitars, Windsor Mill, North Adams, Massachusetts. Working to guide students through hand-building guitars, mandolins, and ukuleles. BerkshireStringedInstruments.com for class registration. And the Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, presenting Belfast Blues, Geraldine Hughes' one-woman show about war-torn Belfast, directed by Carol Kane. October 14th and 15th, newpaltz.edu.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have a lot of letters. I want to get to those in just a moment. I do want to talk, of course, about Charlotte, a second night of protests. It does fit into what we were just talking about. A second night of protests set off by the police killing of a black man spiraled into chaos and violence after nightfall on Wednesday when a demonstration was interrupted by gunfire that gravely wounded a man in the crowd. Law enforcement authorities fired tear gas in a desperate bid to restore order. At one point, he was reported as deceased. I think there was a large chunk of time last night where many news outlets was reporting that there had been a death in the during the protest. The city said on its Twitter account that the unidentified man was on life support after what officials said was a civilian-on-civilian confrontation. The authorities provided no further details. Charlotte city officials had said earlier that the man had been killed in the unrest. The police department reported that four officers had injuries that were not life-threatening.
The most horrifying thing in that story to me was that the mayor of the city, where there's been a problem, has decided that she's going to look at the film, the video of this, and she's doing it today. What was she doing yesterday that was more important than this? Why isn't the top administrators of the city working to talk with people, to calm things down, to get this taken care of before we have a confrontation in the street? It's really unfair of the cops who are under attack by angry citizens. It's really unfair of them to say they have to handle it in a better way.
Mayor Jennifer...
offense.
Mayor Jennifer Roberts is the mayor you're speaking of, who said, "We are working very hard to bring peace and calm back to our city." A spokesman for Ms. Roberts said that she had requested and planned to review today a police dashboard video.
When did you see the video?
With Keith Scott, the man, black man who was shot and killed here on Tuesday, but she said she would not make the video public.
But don't you need to divorce the two events? Doesn't the investigation of the shooting have to be something separate and apart from the reaction to the shooting, kind of on both? I mean, because the problem is, I keep feeling like you guys are trying to, you're justifying, it almost sounds like you're justifying the rioting based on the alleged egregiousness of the shooting.
Rioting is not a word I've heard in the coverage, Rich.
And by the way, there's looting going on.
They're yelling. Yeah.
They're vandalizing businesses. They're overturning police cars. They're starting fires.
That's rioting.
If I may, you cannot divorce the two.
Wait a second, Alan.
You cannot divorce the two because when a whole community believes that their children are being murdered, that where if it were a white perpetrator, if in fact it was an act of criminality, they would not have been killed. And when there is this massive feeling in this country that this is so, you cannot divide the anger that a community is feeling from what is going on there. Didn't John Adams defend the rioters?
Exactly, yes. Right. Yes. John Adams defended the English soldiers who were attacked by the rioters
and got them off
because he understood, as apparently you do not, that you have to separate.
And I raised it for what reason?
That you have to separate the response from the action, because if you don't, you just get an ever escalating cycle of violence.
I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I'm only going to say that we have 7 or 8 minutes, and we have a lot of letters, so I'd like to get to as many of those as we possibly can. Get ready, Rich.
Okay, Robin says, sorry, but listening to the white people arguing about the merits of stop and frisk isn't particularly edifying.
I'm not allowed to have an opinion on it because I'm white?
Of course you are.
We have a black and white problem in this country, and that means blacks and whites should be discussing it.
Brian says, swore off writing to you months ago. But once again, you missed the mark of objectivity and police tactics. Thank God for Rich. If Libby or Barbara were there today, the panel would be out of control, James said. And by the way, you're welcome. you're welcome. Rich is here. We invited him. You're welcome. Thank you. Okay, and Paul says, the majority of illegal drug use is among whites. Why aren't the cops stopping and frisking more whites than blacks? If it put the lie to the use of stop and frisk, that's from Paul. And Leslie says, Rich is either willfully ignorant or completely naive. Stop and frisk is not good policing. It treats citizens as suspects simply because of their complexion. If you want to curtail drug use, why not stop and frisk on Wall Street?
I'd be okay with that too, actually.
That's great.
But you'd have to take it into the boardrooms.
Yeah.
James says the tactic was ruled unconstitutional, so the question is moot. All right, and then he goes on, but we want to get to everybody. Rick says, any appropriate bumper music you played, walk on by. Robert says, just to be clear, do you really think that the New York City cops who stopped and frisked tens of thousands of black New Yorkers every year, but virtually no white people, had any basis other than their color and maybe also their being young? If so, I suggest you review the testimony in the federal case that led to the technique being banned. Good morning, says Alex. I have worked in emergency services a little less than 10 years. Through personal experience, good police are few and far between. The amount of times I have heard openly racist comments as well as disdain towards the poor is too many to count. I feel this can only be changed by altering the culture of each department, not an easy task. Jason says, I'm curious to see how Trump's national stop and frisk policy is perceived by his anti-government alternative right support, alt-right support. I suppose they worry about it and should speak volumes about the policy's target. And
I actually thought that was like the interesting conservative response to that was, you know, that you don't want to promulgate national policing policy because it's an anti-conservative thing. But I think Trump went back and said he felt those decisions should be made locally.
Bill says, Joe, you need to follow up the reported stats with the stat on how many of these stops resulted in any kind of criminal action. There is some validity on both sides' complaints, like everything else, and that's from Bill. Anne says, Rich is so completely out of touch with black reality, it's impossible to know which misconception to address. Spend 5 minutes a day on black Twitter and open your mind to systematic racism.
And Eve says, Rich is absolutely wrong. And this is an issue that was essentially settled in New York City. The police told the courts that they stopped people who matched descriptions of suspects, but it was shown that they stopped anyone they wanted for any reason or no reason at all. And then she goes on.
I did start the discussion by conceding that, and certainly in New York City, the police did take it too far, and that's an acknowledged mistake.
My letter says Summer is for Rich specifically, stop and frisk and the war on drugs have the historical roots in the Southern Strategy, which was racist movement in both the Reagan and Nixon administrations. It's downright denial to ignore how racist stop and frisk is, especially when it results in the deaths of so many black men and women. Says Joe, who writes a lot, Rich Honan is dead wrong in asserting that most stop and frisk stops occurred in black and Hispanic neighborhoods. The objection was that a black person could not walk on Fifth Avenue without being stopped. Demand a footnote. That's what Joe says. Betsy says, my take on this after some thought is stop and frisk does not happen in largely white and especially upper class communities. Okay, we got that one. Joanne says, wow, listening to Rich, I sometimes feel like the Republicans and Democrats live in different universes. Is Rich saying that Trump is not inciting racism and Islamophobia? Next, he'll say that global warming is a hoax. Really?
I am saying that Trump is not inciting racism and Islamophobia. I do believe you on global warming, though.
Sean says, hello all. Rich, there are a lot of good people in Ferguson and St. Louis who do not want the police anywhere near them because they think for good cause that they're out for them or at a minimum are afraid of them and don't value their lives as they do their own. My daughter went to school in St. Louis. I saw posticized signs on doors that say, we don't call 911.
And one more and we'll call it a morning.
Rich, Trump was endorsed by the police union, which scolded him for not giving the Oklahoma police office due process, pretty much condemning that police officer in the incident. The black community knows it when it is being pandered to. You should, too.
All right. We'll end there. Thank you to our panelists this morning, Alan and Rosemary and Rich. Thank you very much. Thank you for your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
And read those letters once before you send them.
Just once. We'll be back after this break.